In her youth, Anna Sagal saw herself as a hippie child, but as she bounced around Europe with her parents, she unwittingly developed the sensibilities that have paved her career.
I flew down to Guatemala with $1,000 in my pocket and traveled on the bus. Basically, it started with all Guatemalan merchandise, shirts, backpacks, belts, hacky sacks, you name it, all things bright and beautiful. And that was the beginning of Ad Lib.
Sagal opened Ad Lib Clothing 35 years ago in Boone and moved her boutique to Asheville at a time when there wasn't much else downtown.
Trends come and go. I feel like my customer wants clothes that she is going to enjoy today and they're going to last and she will enjoy them for years to come.
Drop into Ad Lib Clothing on Haywood Street, celebrate the shop's anniversary all through April, and find out why Anna Sagal isn't slowing down, even after 35 years.
It still amazes me that Ad Lib has become my life and that it has brought so much joy to so many women, and Ad Libbing it has worked for me.
I am a maker, a builder, a baker, although sometimes my messes are all that you'll find. I'll tell a story, both true and allegory.
Watch any of his performances or study any of his visual art, the easy takeaway is Edwin Salas is one disturbed artist. And how could he not be? When I profiled him in 2019 for Asheville's public radio station, he told me about the rape he suffered 30 years earlier and about the murder of his mother when he was just 5 years old. And indeed, much of his creativity blooms from what he labels his dark, happy place and is directly shaped by those traumas. Death is an undercurrent in virtually everything he creates.
When the people see my art, they say that, oh, yes, this is really dark. It's a dark humor. It's a little strong, but it's not completely dark. Have a little funny. Have a little beauty. And yes, maybe this is my message. We have, yes, a dark part, light part, but it's not something bad or good. It's part of us.
This is The Overlook with Matt Pikin, a podcast about the news, arts, issues, and trends of Asheville, North Carolina. The annual Asheville Fringe Festival is just around the corner, and Edwin Salas is about as fringy as it gets in Asheville. He's presenting his twisted version of Hansel and Gretel in two performances of puppetry with dolls he carved himself. We'll talk about why he never shields his audiences from death, even in his works for children. We'll get into his recent artistic explorations through virtual reality programming, and Edwin's insistence that despite his art, he's far from a scary person. Edwin Salas is a native of Mexico who didn't start learning English until his arrival in Asheville about 7 years ago. His facility with the language has come a long way, but as you'll hear, his English is still broken and at times difficult to understand. I began our conversation by asking about his perception of how his audiences perceive him.
The question is really interesting. Could we take hours to talk about this? But I think depend. If they found me in front of my art is one vision. For example, one day I had my art at Marquee, and the people say, oh my gosh, what kind of mind can create this darkest stuff and funny and it's really weird stuff? And in this moment, it was like a two elder ladies, but to say, at the same time, I don't put this in my house, but I love so much. Either I take a little print, and the owner hear this say, no, but don't worry, he's a really sweet person. I think the people can imagine when see my art, somebody in a cave to take a tons of drugs, alcohol, have a life of, I don't know, this really outside the control and then can create only these kind of things. When the people know me and know me, I don't take drugs, I don't take a lot of alcohol, and they like, oh, but you're a sweet guy, you're a good guy. For example, if we today we talk about theater, and when the people watch me in the performance, the people is, it's really scared about me.
Yeah, that you seem unhinged. You seem like you could be psychotic in some ways.
Yeah, and the people say, oh my gosh. And this is, for me, it's the best compliment. Is compliment in English? The best compliment can make me sometimes say me, in some moment, I feel terrified because I think was really real. For me, it's amazing. We are here in the BB Theater. You go inside in the theater, all is fake. It's a theater. But if for 1 minute, do you believe it's real, the things that happen there, and the actor is no more an actor, it's a real person to really happen this thing in this moment, and you feel terrified happen something in this moment, in this place, oh my gosh.
Well, here's how I see how people would view you in performance. And I think this is where the best performers communicate that they're really giving a lot of themselves to the performance. So that while you might be presenting a fictionalized or abstract story, the person who would create this, that's what would be scary to them, I think, is that they think, okay, we're in a performance, but this person is, wow, this person's really off the edge. That's what I gather that people would think of you. And when they get to meet you and talk with you off stage or outside the gallery or outside of what they're looking at, it does present a real contrast. And yes, you've told me enough about your story about, and we'll talk about some of that here, about the abuse you suffered when you were young, your mother being murdered when you were young. It's obvious how some of this dark, happy place, as you call it, the dark side, is present. How long did it take you, or when did you start manifesting this dark side of you in performance and in art?
I think always, when I've been in Italy, we talk about 20 years ago when we began to make performance more serious, more professionally.
And that's when you were studying puppeteering,
yes,
correct?
Yes, technically. And there in Italy, that I either if it was a performance for kids with the sweet stories, not really scary like the things I make now, always somebody die in the performance. Because sometimes in some histories for kids, yes, somebody died, but after, no, they come to the life, no, was saved. No, I love so much to talk about the kids and the young general audience. The dead no have solution. If once somebody dead, is your dog dead? The dog is dead. No come back. Either you clone your dog, it's not your dog.
And what do you think is your motivation for bringing home death to young people in that way?
I think for me in the particular, if somebody talk to me about the dead with the taboo or the dead is something bad, something to hide in, don't be proud about the feeling of the dead and the sadness, maybe it could be better. Because not here only in the United States, say in general, because I travel a lot, I make a lot of performance in different parts of the world, and I seen it's the same, where the parents, the institution, try to make, to put the kids in the bubble. The problem is this bubble, with the little spike outside the reality, make book. And when they make book, the kids are without air. And it's the moment to say, oh my gosh, this is real. This, I think this is the big motivation to bring me to say, no, it's to say the kids, for example, look, the war is terrible and all is terrible and your parents are no. It's to say, yes, we live with this, but we can learn to live with this and live in joy.
Do you think that message, you were even aware of that 20 years ago when you were creating these works? Do you think that was something that was top of mind? Or did that take time for you to understand even why you were producing these dark works for children?
I think with the years, in these last 25 years, I make performance in professional form. I can explain better if you ask me. 20 years ago, maybe I can tell you something. But now with the experience of the year, to have this performance, to touch this like this. In the past, I was more soft. But now in the presence, now I know what I want to say. I'm really sure. Either if the performance could be for kids, because when you have the audience of kids, always you have adults there. I make a performance 2 weeks ago in a school. And this is interesting because it was a performance I make in Italy 25 years ago. I revealed the puppets to make this performance for this school. And the teachers tell to other teachers, say, oh, that's amazing. The kids was really entertaining and loved the performance. But the most interesting, the performance was for us too. In a performance for kids.
You've always tried to straddle those lines between creating performance for children that also adults could gather something from and relate from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With the performance I will present in the Fringe Festival, yes, have a lot of layers. I love the performance to have a lot of layers. You can take the layer about the dance. You can take the layer about the theater. You can take the layer about the puppets. You can take the layer about the history, the classic fairy tale history, and you entertain with only this, or you can begin to take the other layers in the back.
You're doing your own very unique take on Hansel and Gretel for the Fringe Festival. Have you always drawn from other stories, from classic fairy tales, classic stories, and twisted them or used them only for inspiration to make your own unique works? Or no, have you started from whole cloth? Do you largely start from whole cloth and create your own narratives from there?
With other companies, I make Shakespeare. I make Macbeth for a company in Taiwan. I make Shakespeare for a company in Mexico. I make Shakespeare for a company in Colombia. And yes, always I make this little twist. With the fairy tales, I make something about Alice in the Wonderland, but to talk about the pedophilia side of Lewis Carroll. And now with this, with Hansel and Gretel, it's talk about the irreversible.
What do you mean by the irreversible?
If you make a mistake with your kids, it's forever. Forever. It's no back.
When did you and your wife and child move to Asheville?
My wife lived before in Asheville. I moved here in Asheville 6 years ago, technically.
So when you came here, your facility with English was virtually none, correct?
Yes. I know something, but I think now I know a little more, just a little more.
But I think in some ways that helped shape you as a performer, at least in this community, because the performances I've seen, you rarely verbalize. You might vocalize. There might be utterances and guttural sounds that you'll make, but you're not using verbal words. You're not, very little of that.
This kind of performance like this, I began to make in Mexico before, because I have my Italian part of my artistic life when I use a lot of talk in the puppetry. It was a lot of talk. And after when I met dance, a butto dance, I began to take off a lot of things. I take off a lot of props. I take off the stage. You know, a puppeteer needs a stage. And say, I take off the stage for to be more free, not have the stage. I take a lot of props. I take a lot of hyperrealism in the performance. I leave only the puppets that really need it. The first piece I present in Fringe Festival here, The Fall in Love, was my first performance without near no words, because it was the first part of the performance is no words. The second part have some words. But these things, because I search the form with less, say more, and leave other people with more imagination between the words.
At the same time as cultivating your performance career, have you always been a visual artist? Or did that visualization of your dark, happy place, did that start coming later?
Oh, I think come later, because I think I was a visual artist. But here in Asheville, when the situation with the performing arts, economical, no, was good for me, to say, began to search other forms to make money or have an entry, was the form to say, maybe return to make some paintings. And after I began to make more and more, and now I'm really inside in the block printing, The most interesting of all this evolution, I have a class of virtual reality.
Virtual reality.
Yes, I study how to make video games in UNCA. First, I began in AV Tech, amazing place, to take my Associate in Arts after going sign UNCA, with the pretension to study for to create video games, new media. And after inside the new media department, my advisor told me, you're good for the coding.
He felt you were good at coding.
Yes.
Do you like coding?
Yes.
You do, really? That's very different than the kind
dark,
of work
I... Yeah, it's my really dark side.
So why were you inspired to get into computer coding toward the end of creating video games? What was the initial inspiration? What do you want to do with that skill?
I can tell you exactly. Was the pandemic... If my dark, my art, like a puppeteer or performance or dancer, literally dying before the pandemic, was the double tap over the head of my art. It not only for me, it was for a lot of people, and not only for art, for a lot of situations. In this moment, I seen how a lot of people go inside the video games, more than normal. Video games industry grew up so amazing with the pandemic. Because the people, what do? I play video games. When I see the video games, I began to watch the video games, say, is there the place I can continue to tell my stories?
I see that as a place where you can merge your art forms.
Exactly.
You can be very visual, obviously, but you can also tell stories and do performance there. Have you already started creating works specifically for the computer, for video gaming?
Yes. For example, I have in this moment developed in the UNCA two games. One game is not completely, it's that exercise for a student. What one game, it's called Saudade. Saudade.
So darling?
No, Saudade.
How do you spell that?
S-A-U-D-E-A-D-E. It's a Portuguese word. It's a word only exists in Portuguese. It's a video game in virtual reality. You can go inside in the mind of the dead child. And in the mind of this dead child is an island. So you need to find a little pieces for to understand or for to give peace at the soul of this dead child.
So is it the spirit, like a ghost of the
yes.
child that's trying to put themselves to rest by...
And you're inside in the spirit world of this.
That's fascinating. Would you say this video game is embodying what you have strived for often in your performances?
I think it's a new tool. With the headset of virtual reality, you can go inside one of my performance. It's wow. It's amazing. The second a game I developed now together with my best friend. It's a game about the tarot. But this tarot is to talk a man. It's a really old man, lost identity, and he's near to die, but he don't know about his identity. It's not completely developed, but the idea of the game is in some moment you go in this brujo house, witchcraft house, and you have this cards of big giant cards of tarot, and you choose that he give the pass, and you go in the pass, and you found is the desert when you found your parents die in the desert for to save you, and it's a big reference for thousands of people die in the desert in the border for to come to make the American dream, and now in this moment it's something of now to happen now. Maybe it's no more Mexicans a lot, but we have all the brothers from Venezuela to cross, to walk 1,000 miles for to save his life. And a lot of people die there.
More after this. What if Jesus were resurrected today as a stand-up comedian? Well, he might sound a lot like Robert Duback when he brings his stand-up Jesus to the Wortham Center for the Performing Arts. The creator of the Book of Mormon is back to spread his gospel about false prophets and duplicitous politicians while redeeming sinners of all faiths. Catch Stand Up Jesus, 8 p.m. May 3rd and 4th at the Wortham Center. Find details and tickets at worthamarts.org. Death permeates, or at least the concept of death, if not the actual bringing people into a reality of death, permeates most, if not all, of your work. How do you think you've come to terms, or how do you think you've evolved in your own view of death as you've aged, as you've matured as an artist, as you've presented more work? What do you want to say now about death that you maybe weren't saying 10, 20 years ago?
Yes, of course, it's more mature, my concept about death. Death is something always the people tell is something terrible. Of course, it's terrible not for the people to die. It's terrible for the people to remain here and have this hole. It's how to live with this hole with beauty. When the people see my art, they say that, oh, yes, is it really dark? It's a dark humor. It's a little strong, but it's not completely dark. Have a little funny. Have a little beauty. And yes, maybe this is my message. We have, yes, a dark part, light part, but it's not something bad or good. It's part of us. And the terrible situation to happen at the humanity, it's happened at everybody.
Yeah.
But what happened if we learn to live with this in the beauty, in the happiness?
I'm wondering, did it take you having a child to really start to understand that in a more profound way?
Yes. In one of my last performances I made, it's called Dracula Killed My Mom. Of course, it's the most personal performance because it's technically talk about the murder of my mom. And so it's a one part of the performance, because in this performance, yes, Edwin is Edwin in the performance. It's the only performance I'm really this person. And in the middle of the performance, there arrive other tiny Edwin in puppet to say me, stop to be ridiculous. Stop to be the victim.
Dracula Killed My Mother was part of a trilogy of stories,
yes.
Right? Are they all completed now?
Yeah, it is completed.
They did.
Yeah.
In completing that, in some way, were you able to put your mother's death into a certain place that you're content with, that you weren't, that was unsettled for you before?
In artistic form, if I tell, yes, it's there. I finished with this trilogy, and that's all. And after, of course, my mom always is present. And some people say, oh, is she really present, your mom? But it's present in the good form. It's some people pray a God, some people pray at a godness, some people pray a Elvis for something. I pray on my mom.
You pray, you hold
yes,
her up
I
as, a,
with de- my, I
as
thought,
a deity in
yes,
a way.
Yes, I talk with my mom. And the last time I played the tarot with my mom. I said, Mom, before the interview, tell me what I want to say. But of course, I know it's a game, a consciousness.
You talked to your mother through the tarot reading before the interview?
Yes, of course.
Really? So is this a regular thing that you do before?
Sometimes.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
What came out in the tarot reading before this interview that you might not have thought about or been focused on if not for the tarot reading?
Yeah, it's interesting because, of course, the tarot in any form is interpretation. That's all. I love the interpretation of that message. It's in between quotes because it's a game. It's
yeah.
a game I make for myself.
Yeah, if anybody else turned over the same exact cards, they might interpret it differently depending
yes.
on where they're coming from. Hansel and Gretel, which you're producing now, it was interesting before we started rolling our tape. You showed me there. You have different posters, promotional posters
yes.
for this show. The one you gave to me, it shows Hansel and Gretel on a poster for missing children.
Yes.
And that whoever created this poster needs help in finding their missing children. Why did you create different posters? What is the other poster?
The other poster is a normal poster when you see Fringe Festival present with Edwin Salas, Hansel Gretel. The photo's more artistic than the poster. But was like a social experiment because I love so much what it impact more, the beauty or the shocking, or you really got to read. Because you see this beauty poster, maybe you don't read. But when you see the word missing, and it's a white poster, really simple. I use a template, they people use it for lost persons. It's a real template. You got to read this missing. And after you see these faces, you don't understand till you go near the poster and they say that it's missing, that Hansel and Gretel, the name of the kids, and down in the photo they say, we lost our kids in the forest. Surely the guilty. Surely a spoiler of the performance. We lost our kids in the forest. And this is the thing to say, we together, and maybe we, like a society, we lost our kids.
Ah, that's very deep. That's really interesting.
It's so, the different layers I love to use in the performance. The performance of Hansel and Gretel will be a bilingual performance.
Oh, so you will have text in this.
Yes, because in one moment I want to translate completely in English, but I think a lot about the people don't understand English and give the opportunity in the French festival to go to enjoy a performance, either if it's in Spanish. But don't worry, if you don't know the Spanish, I have the narrator to translate the kids. And sometimes the kids, they can speak some in English too. The language most of the Hispanic talk in this moment of the different generation is this mix of Spanish with English.
So in your show, are you taking us beyond, far beyond the traditional story of Hansel and Gretel and introducing an entire different universe?
Completely. In the history of the fairy tales, they use the fairy tales for warning about the dangerous world, for warning the parents and for to warning the kids at the same time. And they use strong stuff. They don't put, oh no, this is, it could be cancelable. It is, if you put like this. No, they say they are, the witch arrived, cut in pieces the kid and eat it. To say, oh my gosh, this is cannibalism.
Yeah.
You talk of the kids about, the kids of the 5, 6 years about a cannibalism. Oh, and after you talk about took one of these kids born alive, an old lady in the middle of the forest. And that's, it's this.
Yeah.
These kids murder an old lady in the forest. This old lady tried to help them. But if we go more inside the history, for example, in the history of Hansel and Gretel, Hansel is the brave guy to try to say, don't worry, I can do it, I can do it. In my history, in my version, is inverse. Hansel is weak, sick, mental health have a problems, and he always have fear of all. And Gretel take, how say, the power of this. Behind from this is a political message, this part. And after, he have hallucination, Hansel, about a really white bird, a goose. He always say, look, he's there, it's a goose, it's a goose. Gretel, it's a goose. And Gretel say, oh dear, I don't see nothing of this. But that, what happened, when the people, this is real, when the people go in starvation and dying for starvation, began to have hallucinations.
When they're dying of starvation.
Yes.
That this is strict, it's a puppet show.
It's a puppet show. It's a really, I think, in my history here in Asheville, is the most puppet show you can see. It's a really classic. It's a table with something to hang in. It's a classic marionettes. It's a, like a Czech Republic marionettes in making in wood.
And you carve your own puppets.
Yes, right. I'm carving this puppet.
Yeah.
And something important to tell, this performance was made for the first time 12 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I present in Mexico with the famous Baroque musician from Mexico. He's one of the most important baroque musicians, either from all America, Monica Lopez Lao, and she created a music for this with contemporary music and an interpretation of the Requiem of Mozart. It's all the Requiem of Mozart in the performance. In the performance we just see this in 2 weeks in the Fringe Festival, we have two pieces. These two pieces make me a big pleasure, a famous pianist in Mexico, to remake for me. And it's the part of the Requiem of Mozart and part of Slayer in piano.
Slayer?
Yes, Slayer.
The metal band,
the
Slayer.
The metal band, piano.
That's great.
Yes, I love so much to have the pianist alive, but he lives in Mexico. He sent me the pieces.
Too bad you can't get Kerry King or Tom Araya from Slayer to come.
Yes, to take play the piano.
Right. So what's next for you after this? Are you diving deeper into your virtual reality world making? What's happening?
I continue to study. I make a minor in computer science, a major in new media. I continue to study programming, to coding. I continue to study to make video games. Maybe in summer I have a little surprise about the virtual reality.
Is this virtual reality, would you do it for audiences where they have to wear their own VR headsets?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's the limiting and the same time not, because if you have your headset at home, you can see my future performance.
You can catch Edwin Salas' version of Hansel and Gretel 5 p.m. March 23rd and 2 p.m. March 24th in the Argo Room at Jargon. And here's another Fringe Festival production you can catch, mine. I'm in an improv duo called The Aftermath, and I'm performing with Jillian Bellinger at 7 p.m. March 22nd and 4 p.m. March 24th at Leaf Global Arts. If you value the Overlook's place in Asheville's media landscape, please consider joining dozens of others who are supporting the show through my Patreon crowdfunding page. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. Visit patreon.com/theoverlookpodcast. Our First Look newsletter gives you just a handful of daily headlines from around the local media landscape to get you on your morning. We also have a weekly newsletter devoted to all things The Overlook that hits you every Friday. Both are free and available at podavl.com/newsletter. My conversation with Edwin Salas happened inside the BB Theater in downtown Asheville, which comes to me due to the largesse of Susan and Giles Collard of Asheville Contemporary Dance Theater. The theme song for The Overlook, Maker Song, comes to us courtesy of the Asheville duo The Resonant Rogues. The Overlook is a production of Podcast Asheville. New episodes come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on any social media channel at AVL Overlook. And I'll see you on the next episode of The Overlook with Matt Piken. Hey everyone, Matt Piken here from The Overlook, and I'll get back to my conversation in just a moment. But I'm asking you, the listener, yes, you, listening this very moment, is The Overlook making a difference in your connection to Asheville? Do you know more about what makes this city tick and where we're struggling? If you had to give up one cup of coffee every month to do your part to keep this show going, would you step up? If you answered yes to any of that, and I really hope you did, please join dozens of other listeners by supporting The Overlook with Matt Piken through my Patreon campaign by giving just $5 a month. Give at higher levels and you'll earn free tickets to my live podcasting events. Your support means the world to me and helps keep this show free for anyone to hear. Go to patreon.com/theoverlookpodcast.